It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's gonna get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Welcome to the Wrestling Nostalgia version of the WWE Podcast. Really, really fun show today, guys. Love this show. Every time that I do a Wrestling Nostalgia show, it's a blast. We get to take the current product, put it aside, take all the critiques, put it aside, all the frustrations, all the critiques, all the criticism, all the issues that we have with the current product, we put them behind us for just a couple of moments. Just one show once a week that we can go back to the glory days. And tonight, we're going to go to ECW One Night Stand. And it was in 2005 and 2006. And so I'm going to be covering a little bit of both of them and some of the highlights, some of the things that are just things that I loved. And I think wrestling needs a little more of. Of course, audio is coming your way. I want to be able to live it live with you guys. And I think it adds a lot to the show as you can hear at least what I'm watching and we can live it together and you can hear my real-time reactions. And of course, I'll give you guys a little bit of the memory I have of actually watching it live when it happened back, good Lord, 14 years ago. So that's going to be a blast. And so welcome to the WWE Podcast. If you're new here, we do a wrestling nostalgia show once a week, and we have four other shows that are produced during the week, and it's done on Tuesdays where we focus on Raw. Wednesdays we do exactly what you're listening to right now, the Wrestling Nostalgia, and then we also do a Thursday and Friday, sometimes both Thursday, sometimes Friday again. It varies, but within a 12-hour time frame, you get an NXT and a AEW review show. So that's always a blast. So as AEW Dynamite is being aired right now as I speak, and NXT is also airing as we speak, the Wednesday night wars continue for part four. It's already been 4 weeks, unbelievable. And AEW has mopped the floor with NXT 3 weeks straight. Let's see if they can make it a fourth. I expect that they will. It seems as if the ratings proportionally are following a pattern, and both ratings have dropped since the introductory show, as expected, but the proportion in which AEW is leading WWE's NXT has remained relatively the same. So I expect that trend to continue after, you know, it's just like any show on television. We're all interested in the season premiere, and then ratings dip. That's true for across the board. It's true across the board for almost every TV show in the history of television. And then usually people come back for the finale. But in this case, there is no finale when it comes to professional wrestling. So there just tends to be kind of a watermark in which both brands will set. And if they can maintain or level off for months at a time, it's like, hey, okay, well, here's the watermark. Here's where we're at. Here's what we're averaging. Let's see if we can bump it up and bump it up and bump it up. It's a marathon, not a sprint, as WWE so eloquently put it when they did that press release after AEW on their premiere show defeated soundly NXT. And so nonetheless, Wednesday Night Wars are underway. I'm excited. I know that many of you out there are excited. So an AEW show, review show is coming, as well as an NXT review show, which I'm really excited to be able to bring you guys. So 5 days a week for those new people, or reminders for those who are long stays of this show. I'll be back personally. I'll be back Saturday, right? Because Saturday is our co-hosting day, and I'm looking forward to Anthony DeMarco and I joining forces once again to discuss everything in wrestling, including Friday Night SmackDown. So Saturday is going to be a blast. And then, of course, back at it on Tuesday. Just as a quick reminder, if you'd like to get an ad-free version of this show, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast, and you can get yourself an ad-free experience, get on the show, and there'll be a special coming up shortly, too, where I'll disclose more details later. For those of you who may be thinking about it on the border, not sure, well, I may be hanging the bait out there a little bit for you to see if you might want to come on board and just give us a try. So that'll be announced in the next few days as to exactly what I'm going to be doing, as well as on Red Circle. That's where the actual feed is generated from my home for the WWE podcast, is on Red Circle. You'll be able to get exclusive content, but I don't know exactly what that exclusive content is yet. I'm trying to land a few interviews. I'm trying to get some things on there that we haven't done before, but that's just coming down the line. It's not done yet, but I'm looking for some exclusive content for, it's kind of like a VIP section of the show. So anyway, we're expanding the show. Thank you, everybody who's listening, and the numbers have been great. I really want to thank everybody for making this show grow on a really daily basis. It's awesome. You guys are the reason we are successful. So thank you so much. So let's get to ECW, One Night Stand. I want to talk a little bit about, first, as we're going to go in sequential order, ECW One Night Stand 2005. Now, this pay-per-view took place on June 12th, 2005 in the Hammerstein Ballroom, or Hammerstein Ballroom, take your pick. 2,500 people in attendance, and the main event, just so you're aware, maybe it'll jog your memory, was a tag team match between the Dudley Boys and the team of Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman. A couple of the undercard matches were Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero, Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka. So that may or may not jog your memory, but to me, the biggest thing that stood out in this particular ECW One Night Stand version was the very beginning of the show. And of course, I'll talk about some of the other matches, but I really, really want to talk about the one thing that made this pay-per-view stand out. And honestly, what I remember the most from this was, again, Paul Heyman's introductory promo that he cut, coming out in front of his former family and thanking everybody. He was brought to tears by the Thank You Paul chants. And then he had one of the best shoot from the hip, as he'll say, promos against JBL, Edge, and Eric Bischoff. Really great stuff. And you could tell that this was if they did not intend this to happen, then I would believe it. It was sold very well by everybody involved, which tells me the way that they reacted, the way that Edge and Bischoff and JBL reacted, I think, tell the story that this was not planned, that they didn't know what Paul Heyman was going to say to them as they were standing on the balcony and acting like children when they were getting, you know, basically roasted by Paul Heyman. So I'll just give you guys a little bit of audio from that. It is a couple of minutes in length, so just bear with me, but it's worth listening to. And then on the other side, I want to be able to discuss some of this with you. So here, just take a listen.
And I was going to take the high road and just say thank you and leave.
Don't take the high road, Paul.
But I have something to say to you! You see, I've waited a long time to say this to you, Eric Bischoff! But in case you don't notice, it's not Paul Heyman with his tail between his legs going to a WCW pay-per-view! You are in our house, bitch! hide your wives. It's Edge. Promo has the balls to say this to you, but I have two words for you. Matt freaking Hardy! WWE champion for a year is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesday.
I mean, just brilliant stuff by Paul Heyman. And the reactions, particularly by Edge and JBL, were authentically defensive if you watch them, acting like children. And look, I'm an Edge fan, and I remember that whole storyline back when Matt Hardy and Edge were fighting over Lita, for lack of a better term, and Edge ended up taking Lita in real life, and Matt Hardy was no longer with the company, and Matt Hardy attacked Edge backstage and in kind of a real fashion, and then their match was utterly disappointing. And Edge actually ended up winning that match, which was just mind-bogglingly strange, just as Triple H beating Sting makes no sense. But it happened, and I know we're not talking about that match, but the point is that that's when people weren't making it public yet about, and Edge wasn't acknowledging publicly yet about what had happened and the story that came out, and Edge was the actual heel here because of what it was perceived that he did to Matt Hardy and Lita's relationship. And I remember, again, people were chanting Matt Hardy during Edge's matches, basically forcing the hand of Vince McMahon to bring back Matt Hardy, and that he did. And again, it just outside of his initial return and the real vibes going on between the two, it was a flop. Outside of that, I never thought they really capitalized on Matt Hardy's return during that whole real life event. And I remember Lita commenting years and years later about that match that happened and how uncomfortable she was, and you know, she was gonna do it, but, and you know, be at ringside, but how uncomfortable she was with it. And man, you don't get any more real than that. It's just brilliant when that kind of stuff happens, and then, you know, the fans get wind of it. And you gotta remember, this is at a time before Twitter, before Instagram. Hell, Facebook was only a year old when it was called The Facebook. Anybody remember that, with the logo being like a silhouette of a guy or something? MySpace was still a thing. That's how long ago this was. So when you talk about news getting out, you had to go to the dirt sheets. You had to go to the websites that everybody knows what they are. you had to go there and just look at the rumors and you know, cross check and see, well, does this site have it and this site have it? Are they just copying each other? Or is this actually, you have a source, I have a source, they both check out. That tells me this adds a little bit of credibility to the fact that, hey, maybe Matt Hardy is actually the victim here, right? So for Paul Heyman to say that on ECW TV, really sponsored by WWE, he could say it was not a WWE show. It was a WWE show, unfortunately. I mean, you had all the stars of WWE there, a good handful of them. You even had Stone Cold come out at the end of the night and stun Bischoff. So it was really ECW, wink, wink, sponsored by WWE. I mean, it wasn't a true, you know, 1997, 98, 99 ECW show. This was a ECW format with the, you know, the help of a WWE platform, if you will. So, but again, Paul Heyman, even back, you know, 14 or 15 years ago, was brilliant on the mic, and then roasting JBL about how he had a 1 year championship reign. And the reason he did is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays, which is when SmackDown was taped, in 2005. And amazing how they went from Tuesday to Friday to Thursday to Friday to Tuesday back to Friday. I mean, they've just been all over the damn place. I think the only night they haven't done SmackDown is Wednesdays. So it's just, it was awesome to hear him roast JBL, which is probably partially true. Although JBL, to his credit, as much as I do not like him on a personal level, and from everything I've heard, and this is not just, oh, you don't know him personally, you're just, you know, from a distance. Look, when you hear stories that sync up from Justin Roberts, from Blue Meanie, right, from all these guys that have been bullied by JBL backstage, oh, it's just the hazing process. Well, guess what? This is 2019, okay? Let's be adults here. It seems as if JBL is, he's just a bully. He really is. And so on a personal level, I really dislike JBL. On a professional level, I think he overachieved big time. I really do. So my personal feelings for JBL need to be put aside. But the roast by Paul Heyman did have a little bit of truth into it, telling JBL that, hey, you're champion just because Triple H wants to not work two nights in a row and be on television two nights in a row. It's just brilliant stuff. Loved it. I mean, the ECW crowd, you talk about a bipartisan crowd, or a partisan crowd, rather. Man, Paul Heyman was like a god in there. Not one person booing him. It was the father coming home to all of his sons and his family, and that's what this was, an awesome reunion. And so I loved it. I really did. And yes, we got at the end of the night, we did get Stone Cold coming out. And look, as much as I love Stone Cold, you can't have Stone Cold there stunning Eric Bischoff. Yes, Stone Cold was a part of ECW. But for about as long as I'm recording this show, he was in ECW. He was not there long. Yes, the Stone Cold character was, you could argue, birthed in ECW, where he was given the creative freedom to become who and what he is, and really channel that anger he had from being fired from WCW. We all know the story. But he wasn't a tried and true, organic, homegrown ECW guy. So that's my argument. That as much as I love Stone Cold, to make this a true ECW show, you can't have WWE guys on the show. You just can't. You can't. But they did. And honestly, I didn't dislike the show. I thought the wrestling was good. Of course, Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero in a submission match went 10 minutes, was good. Dudley Boyz defeating Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman in a tag match just under 11 minutes. I thought it was good. I really did. And Bischoff actually replied. Well, Austin at the end asked for Bischoff's thoughts on the event while on the ground, and Bischoff replied, F ECW. And then Austin executed the Stone Cold Stunner on Bischoff to end the show. And I mean, the crowd liked it, but again, it wasn't a tried and true, organic, homegrown guy. So anyway, I'm not going to complain. I'm an Austin fan, but I can see where some of the ECW natives would have been a little bit put off by that. So I loved this show. I wasn't an ECW fan when WWE and WCW was like the trifecta on Monday nights. I wasn't an ECW fan from that perspective. I mean, I would watch it occasionally, flip to the channel and go, man, who's on fire this week? You know, who's wrapped in barbed wire this week? It, on the surface, was much more violent. And that's how they stood out. You got to stand out. That's their differentiating factor. That's their X factor. They were trying to differentiate themselves from their competition. And they did. And they did. And they have a cult-like following. To this day, you hear ECW chants. And I just never gravitated towards that product. It didn't have as much soul to it. It didn't. It wasn't good in the storytelling department. It was good in the shock and awe department. And it was good in allowing guys the creative freedom, but it didn't have a whole lot of direction. It was kind of like the inmates running the asylum at times, which is why I never gravitated towards it. It was unique, and I give guys all the credit in the world, but it just wasn't it wasn't as polished as WWE was, or even WCW for that matter. So, and don't even get me going about WWE's version of ECW. I'm not talking about One Night Stand. I'm talking about when they brought the brand back and made an ECW championship and Bobby Lashley was the champion. And I think it was like 2008 or something like that. That was an abomination of ECW and failed and doomed to fail from the beginning. That was a complete disaster, one in which should have never happened, really. And then NXT was born shortly thereafter. And NXT, if you remember, was a joke to begin with. NXT was a complete joke. You guys remember doing like having the competitors and doing like barrel races and weird crap running around the ring in like some kind of, you know, wipeout style of obstacles. Like it was Double Dare. You know, I feel like Mark Summers was going to come out and you know, host one of those awful events for NXT. I mean, I remember associating NXT with like embarrassment. And it, to WWE and mostly Triple H's credit and vision, they certainly grew from nothing and became something. Yes, they had the funding of WWE to back them. I don't want to say they came from absolutely nothing, but the brand, the third brand, came from absolutely nowhere. It was like a Randy Orton RKO. All right, guys, well, I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to get to ECW's One Night Stand Part 2 in 2006. And most specifically, when I think of One Night Stand, I don't even think of what I just had you guys listen to. As great as Paul Heyman's promo was, that might be second on the list for me. I don't think about Austin stunning Bischoff, none of that. I don't think of anything but one thing, and that is John Cena versus Rob Van Dam for the WWE Championship and the reaction John Cena got. A beautiful thing back in 2006. So we're going to get to that right after this. All right, so you guys know that I'm into fitness, right? So if you're doing any kind of exercises or workouts or anything, you got to have good shoes. So what you should do is check out the hottest trending shoes in fitness right now. Prowl shoes are designed for fitness, cross training, bodybuilding, and powerlifting. That's Prowl shoes. You got to check them out, guys. It's got a custom option to get your favorite wrestler custom shoe at prowl-x.com. That's prowl-x.com. All right, welcome back. And so before I went to break, I spoke quickly about ECW 2006, ECW's One Night Stand 2006. Now, this pay-per-view took place on June 11th, 2006, at the Hammerstein Ballroom again in Manhattan in New York. And man, this was a very one match heavy pay-per-view. It featured the main event of Rob Van Dam and John Cena for the WWE Championship. Yes, we also had Taz defeating Jerry Lawler by submission. Kurt Angle defeating Randy Orton by submission. The FBI, remember the FBI? Little Guido and Tony Mamaluk. Jeez, I can't even pronounce that. That's how long it's been. I'm reading this on my screen, and I still can't pronounce it. Big Guido and the defeated Super Crazy and Tajiri. Rey Mysterio versus Sabu ended in a no contest. Edge, Lita, and Mick Foley defeated Balua McGillicuddy, Terry Funk, and Tommy Dreamer. Balls Mahoney defeated Masato Tanaka. So, and of course, the seventh match, Rob Van Dam defeating John Cena for the WWE Championship match, or championship rather. And so, again, this is kind of in line with my previous issue with these pay-per-views. If they are truly ECW pay-per-views, as you say that they are and are branded as such, ECW One Night Stand, how can you have on an ECW show the WWE and World Heavyweight Championship defended? That it completely waters down what this pay-per-view is supposed to be all about. It just does. If you're going to do this, you have to have your organically grown guys or big stars that came from ECW on this show. John Cena certainly didn't. Certainly didn't. Right? Kurt Angle didn't. Randy Orton didn't. I mean, Edge didn't. You have guys, Taz, of course, did. You have Tajiri. He was in ECW. Balls Mahoney, of course. Rob Van Dam, of course. But this is littered with WWE guys. So let me set the stage here. And of course, I want to give you guys some audio. My favorite audio ever given to John Cena. Because John Cena was the modern day Roman Reigns, where he would never turn heel. He was the guy that was forced down your throat. WWE blatantly, transparently saying, this is our guy, and us saying, no. We went from Stone Cold to The Rock to Brock Lesnar to John Cena. You know, it was a very different direction, but John Cena was the guy that WWE put the entire company on his shoulders and said, bring us to the promised land. However, the difference between John Cena and Roman Reigns, John Cena is ultra talented on the mic and has a very, very tangible personality. You can feel it through this television screen. Roman Reigns continues his too cool for school type of attitude and Mr. Silent A-hole jock. That's how he still comes off. After all these years, he still comes off that way. Still. And as much as WWE has not had him in the Universal or WWE Championship picture, and they could say to the fans, well, you complained about him being champion all the time at the top of the card. Well, he hasn't been in the championship picture for how long now? But the argument to that would be, yet he closes and opens most shows. He's on the cover of your terrible, by the way, WWE 2K video game. He's on every truck. He's got his own floats. He's got his own action figures. He's the spokesperson for your, you know, feel-good cancer story. He ends SmackDown over the actual main event, over the WWE Championship match, over Kofi Kingston. His entire reign was tainted by Roman Reigns closing the show, I feel like. So don't tell me that it's, well, Roman Reigns isn't in the title picture. He doesn't have to be for me to see that he is still the focus of WWE and Vince McMahon in particular. So I don't want to hear it. But anyway, this is not a Roman Reigns rant, which I have not had in a while. I feel one coming. Not this show, but it's been a long time since I've ranted about Roman Reigns. I think one's due. What do you guys think? Let me know. So building to the match I really want to talk about here, and you could break down all these matches. To be quite frank with you, I don't remember a whole lot other than Rob Van Dam and John Cena. And this was a 20-minute match. And brilliant. Amazing reaction by the audience. You have a homegrown guy versus exactly what all the ECW fans and current WWE fans rejected about John Cena. Was that he was this feel good, goody two shoes. You are an invader in my home, and you stand for everything that is wrong with the organization right now. You are the embodiment of the issues of the company. And John Cena certainly heard it that night in June of 2006. So if you guys want to take a listen to this, I'd really encourage you to listen to this reaction. Absolutely awesome.
Oh, fist.
Nice throw.
Are you kidding?
That's love. I know that guy.
So that was just a little bit of the reaction. It was a bit edited from the clip, but you get the gist. You get the gist of the complete rejection of John Cena in that match. It wasn't just like, hey, you're playing a heel. It was true. We really, like, we genuinely dislike who you are. It cut to the soul of John Cena. When John Cena came out and that reaction hit, it brought such a smile to my face and a tear to my eye. And John Cena holding the awful, awful spinner and WWE Championship belt, which was one of the most disrespectful ways to alter a belt. It became a toy. I mean, really. It became a toy. I really, really, really despised it until The Rock, after he defeated John Cena, finally said, hey, no, we're debuting a new belt, and they've stuck with that belt ever since. And I love the new, I actually love the new WWE Championship belt. Not new anymore so much, but I love the design. Just clean, very straightforward, to the point. It's just the logo, and it says, you know, heavyweight champion. So we have John Cena coming out and holding the WWE Championship above his head and basically head down, just walking to the ring. Loved it. It was a complete rejection. The only other time that I could see of John Cena getting that big of a negative reaction, it may not even equate to this, but it was John Cena versus Triple H at WrestleMania when John Cena got basically booed out of the building there and they still didn't turn him heel. And I'm sure Vince is pointing to that, going, well, they booed John Cena here, and they booed John Cena here, and they booed John Cena here, and we stuck with him, and look what happened. Well, guess what, Vince? You still have people clamoring to see a heel John Cena. You have a complete other world of John Cena that we never got a chance to see, and you never got a chance to experiment with that could have been big money, because you have a just thing in your brain that he is never going to turn heel, and he is the face of this PG, gag-me environment of a company now. And look, they're very successful. It's just, it's not my cup of tea when they become super soft. I know why. From a business decision, makes total sense. Completely agree on a business level. On a personal level, it is just such a soft, kiddie product at times. But anyway, see, I get sidetracked so quickly. So this happened, and John Cena comes out, and you heard a little bit of the audio, but you couldn't see what I was seeing. And John Cena comes out to Rob Van Dam and stands there, and they boo the whole hell, holy hell out of him. And John Cena does what he normally does and throws his shirt in the crowd. And what does the crowd do? They throw it back. And they throw it back. And they throw it back. It was awesome. Nobody even wanted a memorabilia item from John Cena as a handout. They didn't want his t-shirt. When was the last time that happened? So that was... that was awesome. I loved seeing that. And that was very symbolic of how they felt about Cena. Just rejection. There's no other way to put it than disdain and rejection. And the match, people were into blow for blow, ending with Paul Heyman getting the 3 count for Rob Van Dam to win the WWE Championship. And I was fine with it, I guess, now that I have a more aged mind in wrestling of what I would like to see. Yeah, Paul Heyman is the guy. He is the father of ECW. But for him to just come out and suddenly he's a certified official to come out and count the 3 count. I mean, we've seen it happen over professional wrestling for a number of years. Austin counted his own 3 count at Unforgiven when he faced Dude Love, and apparently he was just allowed to keep the championship. I mean, so we've seen it in the past where things like that happening just go, I guess, right? I mean, whatever. Mike Tyson at WrestleMania 14. He was not a certified official. He was just the enforcer. And he had the fastest 3 count in the history of the main event of WrestleMania ever. Still have a problem with that, but... so I just have an issue with that when you can just have guys and gals indiscriminately decide to take over that role and have the capacity and power and authority to do it. So I guess if that's one critique, that's it. But outside of that, this was a match that was all about the crowd and their chance to really tell you how they felt about John Cena. Because he is everything that ECW is not. He was the Antichrist of ECW. And you saw it and you felt it that night from the fans. It was tangible. And I loved every second of it. And could you have imagined had the Hammerstein Ballroom had to deal with a John Cena retaining the WWE Championship? I honestly, like, looking back, I'm wondering if they called an audible in the ring to say, hey, people legitimately may riot here if I retain. Should we just call an audible and have Rob Van Dam win, and then maybe I can win it back in a couple of weeks? I would not be surprised. I didn't do any digging on that, but as I'm speaking about it, and as I'm looking at that really hostile audience, I really don't know if something would have legitimately happened had Rob Van Dam not won the belt. I really wonder that. I mean, I'm going to vote probably towards no, but this would be a situation in which, hey, we need to call an audible, just have RVD win, and we'll figure it out later. So, I don't know, maybe. That'd be interesting to see. So, let me know what you guys thought, though, of ECW One Night Stand 2005-2006. Those are probably the biggest two things were not even the matches themselves. It was the reaction of John Cena in 2006 and the promo from Paul Heyman in 2005 where he shout or had a shoot promo, if you will, on those three individuals of Edge, Bischoff, and JBL. So let me know what you guys thought, though. I'm wondering, what were your memories of ECW One Night Stand, their two iterations? And please, I don't want to hear about any of your memories from the WWE version of ECW. Please, I spare me the pain. Spare me the pain. I really hope you don't have any memories of it, and your mind was just like, "Hey, well, listen, we're not even gonna bother storing this in your memory bank. It's just not worth taking up space." Please. So, anyway, going down some of the news here, I'm looking at as I always do on my Wrestling Nostalgia Nights. Braun Strowman attacked Tyson Fury at the WWE Performance Center. Fine, that's fine. I mean, I guess it's more anything could happen. And as an element of reality to this, that's fine. There's also video of this as well. And again, I mean, if you're going to be nitpicking, why was video even being recorded? Maybe you could say, well, it's a performance center. You got to have cameras on so they can critique how they look and what they do and all that kind of stuff. Maybe. Okay, fine. Maybe. But I'm just ready to get this program over with. You guys know that anytime they bring a celebrity in, I'm not a fan for 99% of the time. It's just never a good deal for wrestling fans because they always feel like the fools for having the big bad celebrity come in and come into their world and end up coming out looking like $1 million and going over on the wrestlers that are there day in and day out. It's just the golden rule. Again, you guys know my two examples. I won't repeat them. Outside of two examples I can think of in the history that I've been watching of them bringing in celebrities, the celebrities 95% of the time are brought there to just get a massive payday, have a semi-good to usually piss-poor matchup with their opponent, and then ride off into the sunset as they get the W or make their opponent look like a fool, and they ride off, and that's it. That's just the rule. That's just what they do. So, but good news for WWE against Monday Night Football. Viewership was up slightly. If you're into the ratings deal, WWE was watched by an average of 2.34 million viewers, which was up a little less than 3% from last week. The first hour was actually down a little bit from last week, but they were able to retain its audience better from start to finish, which resulted in a higher overall average. So that's key. That to me is a statistic that you want to see. That tells you that you had a solid show from start to finish. And I certainly have my critiques, but I said it was a better Raw than last week. So, and I meant it. And we have a season premiere with the drafts now in place. And so that's telling when you're able to maintain the audience. That's key. But WWE trailed behind Monday Night Football with the New England Patriots and New York Jets. They did 10.84 million viewers and a 3.7 rating. Is that really something that's even a competition for NFL anymore? Is the NFL really even concerned about WWE taking viewers away? I mean, these games, these NFL games are monstrous. And even in the blowout of the Patriots beating the Jets 33-0, you still have a monster rating. That's just what the NFL is. So I don't even know why they compare it to Monday Night Football anymore. It's not even true competition. I mean, seriously. So that's a little bit of news coming out of the wire here. Other than that, not a ton happening. I mean, you have your tidbits of news as to, like, for example, why Jake Hager is yet to wrestle in AEW. Like, you have certain things like that. And it's not a breaking news, but if you're interested, by the way, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Hager is working under an agreement that he will not wrestle until after his fight against Anthony Garrett for Bellator MMA, which takes place on October 25th. So in 2 days after Jake Hager has Jack Swagger in WWE, has his MMA Bellator fight, he will be able to then maintain or restart his wrestling career with AEW. So I think that'll be a really good thing. Hager is 2-0 as a heavyweight fighter in Bellator, if you're into MMA, racking up both wins this year, and he defeated J.W. Kaiser with an arm triangle submission in the first round in January. And then he did the same thing to T.J. Jones on May 11th. So, if you're into that kind of thing, and really, this guy is a legitimate badass. Like, I don't think I've ever talked about Jack Swagger, Jake Hager, ever on this show. This guy has legit credentials. I mean, he's a guy that I would never mess with, ever. Never, never. I mean, Jim Ross talks about him, how he was, you know, a legit badass in football and so forth. And this guy is a true athlete, a true badass. So one more thing before I ride off into the sunset. If you're interested in the updated Crown Jewel pay-per-view card, what is it? Well, headlined by, this just hurts my soul to say, Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez for the WWF effing championship. Oh, God, that I'm serious. Like, that hurt me to the center of my soul. The Universal Championship, Falls Count Anywhere, Seth Rollins versus The Fiend, and this match cannot be stopped for any reason. Okay. They'll find some other way to F it up. Braun Strowman versus the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury. God, please let this be over. Just let it be over and let Braun Strowman actually get in a real program. Team Hogan versus Team Flair. You know, if this was not Team Hogan versus Team Flair, if it was some other reason, I don't think I'd be down on this. And the only reason I'm down on it is because Hogan and Flair, this is not the first time they've done this, by the way. Not by a long shot, Team Hogan and Team Flair. Just Google the first time they did this. But I'm interested in it. I'm interested in this match for one person and one person only, Drew McIntyre. I believe, early prediction, Drew McIntyre is going to be the sole survivor. Or I'm sorry, he's going to win this match. This is not an elimination match. So I think we will see Drew McIntyre get the pinfall victory. I really believe that. Over probably Ricochet or Ali or Shorty G. Probably Shorty G. Right? Or excuse me, Chad freaking Gable. Ugh, God. I'm sure we'll get some inspirational speech from him. Because that's just what he does now. But, so I'm interested in really Drew McIntyre in this match. I think he has a potential of a breakout performance. And from everything I'm hearing, that they are really going to be starting to focus on Drew McIntyre, building him as a heel and heading towards the championship, the Universal Championship. I would love that. And by the way, has anyone forgotten that Bray Wyatt attacked Braun Strowman? Is that just supposed to be swept under the rug? Where'd that go? You're telling me Braun Strowman, who has a hairpin trigger if you look at him wrong, and he looks at you with those menacing eyes and tells you you're going to get these hands for just breathing on him wrong, yet Bray Wyatt attacks him and it's just forgotten. Why? Are we supposed to? I mean, you could say, well, yeah, well, they'll follow up on that later. But the reality is, if he did that, Braun Strowman should immediately have gone after him the next week or mentioned it. Nothing. 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 This is the kind of stuff that's just unexcusable. All right. WWE World Cup Tag Team Turmoil Match. My God, we have another World Cup. And if Shane McMahon interjects himself into this as somebody's partner, I'm probably going to rate it like extra explicit podcast. But it's the New Day versus the Viking Raiders versus Heavy Machinery versus Lucha House Party versus Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder versus the OC. I'm just going to, instead of saying versus, name the teams. The Revival, the B Team, Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. And we also have Cesaro versus Mansoor. So that should be interesting. That match is basically a footnote on the pay-per-view. But you know, that should be a good match. I wish it wasn't for the World Cup, because that means absolutely nothing. But usually a World Cup or some kind of consolation ego prize lends itself to a heel winning, like King of the Ring. King of the Ring is notorious for heels winning, because it's a way to brag and pretend they're a king and play pretend and play dress-up. That's all it is. And so the World Cup, I think, would probably be the same thing. So I could see having the OC win it. I could see having even the Revival win it. I see the OC or the Revival or the front runners. I don't see any need for a babyface team to win this when nothing is on the line. Nothing other than bragging rights. So I'm glad there's no Undertaker match. I don't need him right now at Crown Jewel. Crown Jewel is nothing more than a C pay-per-view to me that have no true implications for any storylines moving forward other than the Universal and WWE Championship match. So that'll be interesting to see what those outcomes are. Alrighty, well, guys, I think that is the show. I want to thank you for listening, as always. And again, follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast and hit me up on Instagram, too. I'm actually on Instagram. Just search for WWE Podcast. I'm there. And I'd appreciate it. Hit me up on Apple Podcasts and give me that rating and review if you have a moment. And again, you want an ad-free experience, I'm going to be running a special very soon on Patreon where you can get on the show as a co-host. I'll talk about any topic that you'd like. You can get a shout-out on the show, everything ad-free, you name it. It is a pretty cool deal. So I'm going to be announcing a special very, very soon on my Twitter feed, which is where I really report all my news and give opinions and rants and whatever. So head on over there. Also a website at wwepodcast.com. And by the way, if you do any shopping on Amazon, really easy way to support the show. There's a support the show tab in which you click the banner in that tab and go to Amazon. Just do your shopping as normal. That's it. So, all right, guys. Well, I'll be back on Saturday with Anthony DeMarco as we discuss everything in WWE, Raw, SmackDown, and all the news leading into Saturday. So, as always, thank you, guys. I'll talk to you next time.